What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.
That was a little much on the what's up after last night.
Hey, they're still up 3-2, man.
What's up?
No, I'm saving the downer what's up for if and when they're eliminated from the playoffs. That's right. I'm never doing it again. There's ups and downs, right? I'm not gonna be all gloomy and grim just because they lost a close game.
Yeah, but maybe even just like, what's up?
Listen, don't tell me how to do my job. All right,
Well, then what else would I do here?
It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. He's my co-host, Canucks Insider Thomas Drantz, also covering the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big show coming up. We got the crossover at noon with Donnie and Dolly. Always look forward to that. Drancer, you're here for 2 hours, and then you're off to the airport to do your favorite thing, travel to Nashville to cover more playoff hockey in Nashville. Condolences.
I mean, look, I love Nashville. Don't want anyone to get the wrong idea.
Will you meet a third Harmon at Tootsie's? That's the real question here. Oh, can you keep the streak alive?
Let's go. I believe in me.
You can do this, buddy. All right. We'll get right into it. Let's start with the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
Your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, May 1st, into a new month here. And the headlines, of course, starting with the Canucks lose Game 5 against Nashville 2-1 at Rogers Arena, still holding a 3-2 series lead. But, of course, as we broke down at length yesterday, this means they have to make that dreaded return trip pretty much all the way across the continent to Nashville for Game 6, which will be Friday. And again, as I said, still up 3-2 in the series. Two more opportunities to close this out.
We knew they didn't want to come back to Nashville, was Roman Josi's line post-game. Did you see? Okay. In retrospect, we should have known that Alexandre Carrier would come up big at some point in this series in a game in Vancouver. But I only realized it after the fact when I heard him pronounce the word third, exactly like Alex Burrows. The moment I heard it, I was like, of course.
And Alexander won the turd.
Of course this guy came up big in a third period in Vancouver. No doubt about it. That was locked in. Look, it's a missed opportunity at the end of the day.
Yep.
And I don't know. I'm seeing some chatter like, Canucks deserve to win that game. And it was a coin flip. Like, it was just a pure coin flip, Jamie. I thought
that was the first game of the series where both teams were probably pretty happy with the way they played. Not that there wasn't things the Canucks could improve, but I think almost
power play was bad. Second period was bad, for sure. But there was a lot of good.
But
that,
I think
that first period was fantastic.
If you're looking overall at both teams, that felt like the most consistently well played. If you're taking the two teams together of the games of the series, right? Because I think there's been some stretches.
this bar is on the ground.
No. But this bar is I'm applying this bar to the Preds too.
No, I know. I'm sorry. I want to be clear. I meant the bar for like. Because entertainment value in this series.
I completely agree. But I thought that was the most consistently entertaining game of the series.
It was.
Maybe
no question.
Game one would be there too, but.
Game one was only there because it was so cool in the third period.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, I think at the end of the day, I like the Predators game better, given that they were on the road, and given that by the second period, what had started out as like this nuclear crowd. Because truly, like, that crowd in the first period, during the Streets Have No Name, coming off that dramatic Sunday comeback, that was, like, hostile. That was a hostile environment. Like, Canucks fans in the first frame were such a huge edge, and the Canucks used that edge to sort of press and really play, like, template Canucks hockey.
Yeah.
With the exception that they took a lot of shots before they scored. Well, not a lot, but they took at least 15. Far more than this team usually does. In this series, anyway, but also far more than they usually need to score, given that they had scored on their first shot in consecutive games. So, by the second period, and
by the way, after our discussion yesterday, as soon as the first shot was saved, I was like, uh-oh. They didn't hit their key. They didn't hit their key to the game, scoring the first shot. We're in trouble here.
That's so good. The second period, and what's weird is it was such a strange game because the power plays for both teams sapped momentum from both teams.
Yep.
But it's one thing to have a momentum-sapping power play when you're the Nashville Predators on the road and no one's there to shut up about it, right? With the Canucks, especially in that second frame, as the Predators were like, you know, the better team 5-on-5, then the Canucks would get these power play opportunities. The cross check on McDonough on Patterson, the hook. I thought both of those were pretty soft calls, and the Canucks just couldn't even generate. Right there, no shots.
They could barely even get the zone.
Kiefer Sherwood gets the best chance the other way, and after those power plays, like what was probably Vancouver's biggest edge in the first period. I mean, they had the territorial edge and on, but it was just such a loud, engaged playoff building just waiting to go off, and they never got the chance until that third period, and even that was short-lived, right? Even that ended up being short-lived, especially because there was so much confusion about exactly how the Predators had tied the score, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would say I liked Nashville's game better given that context. Like, they sucked the oxygen out of that game and out of that building, and I thought that mattered as the game went along. So, you know, honestly, I come away from this game with the same take that I feel like I've had every other game this series, which is that, wow, that really could have gone either way.
Uh-huh.
That the only thing separating this team, these teams, are like a bounce, slightly better execution, one goaltender is slightly better than the other, right? Or slightly less bad, I mean, however you want it. But like one team has a narrow margin in net because Seelovs was great.
Yep.
I actually thought Seelovs was better than UC Saros.
Seelovs looked better than Saros for much of the night.
Oh,
now,
man.
Saros ended up making some big saves.
Especially late on Besser.
In kind of wild
and
fashion. Yes.
Yeah.
But it was the one who...
Garland.
Yeah, Garland fed to Lindholm, and Saros was absolutely lost.
He lost his post. And Garland had him on the wrap, but the Predators defended it well. I don't think it was, like, easy. Because if Garland has a guy on the wrap, Garland knows he has a guy on the wrap.
Yeah.
He knew he had the goalie. He just didn't think he had the play.
Garland had Saros in hell on that play.
Saros was
like, I have no idea what I'm doing here. But he recovered to make the save.
He did.
But there were moments like that where it was like, oh, wow, there are goals to be had here. But to his credit, he buckled down and made the big saves in the third period.
Absolutely. He was good enough to prevent all but one shot from beating him. But he didn't, like, outplay Seelovs.
No.
And in fact, I thought the Predators had the balance of better chances until sort of the last 3-4 minutes of the game when the Canucks obviously were going to press and make something. The Pettersson 2-on-1 and the Besser chance sort of standing out there. But like, did the Canucks have a chance like the one McDonough put wide?
No.
Where it's just like, oh man, if you hit that, it's, you know?
Yeah.
Suter hit a post. Kiefer Sherwood hit a post. Predators had a couple 2-on-1s. Seelovs was so calm, and that glove save on McDonough, that was like a swagger stop. That's like a goalie who's feeling really comfortable and really confident. I loved his game. I thought he was a story, frankly. But Saros was just better, and that's the margins. There are no margins. So on the one hand, it's cool that you have two more shots to finish this team off because they're both 50-50s, right? On the other hand, if you lose the first 50-50, you start to get pretty nervous.
Oh, yeah.
So I just think that's the dynamic. There is no space. There is no space between these teams. The Predators are not the easiest playoff opponent that you could have bumped into in the Western Conference. This was always going to be a tough series. We've seen it play out in every single game. And like, I don't even know if Vancouver's, you know, people have just sort of taken it for granted. Like, Vancouver has a skill advantage. And it's like, at the very top of the lineup, yes. I think we saw that play out in Game 4.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that it's much more than skin deep. Like, I don't think this is, like, a big talent edge for Vancouver. I think the biggest edge for Vancouver has been their structural defensive play. That was true again last night. The Predators had a wild time breaking them down. The two goals they got were messy.
And the Preds have lost games with breakdowns in key moments, and they didn't have those last night.
Nope.
Right? Saros had to make some key saves, but it wasn't the same, like, oh my gosh, Lindholm was all alone in front of the net in overtime for some reason.
Fire drill stuff.
It wasn't those types of plays that had cost Nashville early in the series. Yeah, I think the missed opportunity for me was really not capitalizing on the first 10 minutes of the first period, right? Because they played so well, and that's exactly like what you were envisioning in that game, right? Crowds on fire, you come out storming out of the gate, but you had to make it count. And they didn't.
And it was like, again, such fine margins. They had them dead to rights. Like me and Harmon Dial, who I was sitting beside, we like locked eyes on that heavy shift where it was Miller, Suter, Besser with the Canucks top pair. And it was just going on and on. And it's just like, these are the moments that this team always gets a goal. And, you know, their best player in this series, exactly the guy you want taking the one-timer, JT Miller, sort of winds up for it. And I don't believe that he missed. I think he decided to shoot for a stick at the last moment. But when the stick didn't connect, the puck goes far side and he clears the puck for the Predators. You know, inadvertently, he's trying to make a play. We always are going to give credence to JT Miller. Like, he needs the flexibility to make the play. But it was like just off, you know, and in a variety of key moments, the breakaway off of the penalty kill. Right? Like, that's a moment where the building could explode. Like, that would have sent, I legitimately think the Rogers Arena roof would be hovering somewhere about 100 feet above the Vancouver skyline if he scores in that moment. And that's another miss wide and a miss wide far side that ends up clearing the zone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was their best players just off a touch. But that touch matters in a series where there are no margins, where there is very little separating the true talent level of these two teams.
Let's talk about the slap pass thing later, because I know it's been a talking point.
Which one?
Just like the sheer volume of slap passes, which to me I just see as a reaction to, like, this is what Tockett's talking about, right, with the second stick thing. So they didn't come off, but like, it's not as if they were inherently bad ideas.
We're criticizing the thing that led directly to one of the most iconic goals in the last 15 years of Canucks history? What are we talking about? It's like the slap pass, that never works, except that time that I lost my mind Sunday and have been celebrating and rewatching that highlight every 20 minutes since. What are we talking about?
Yeah, it's like
this people
is
are criticizing the slap pass?
Hey, man, I'm just relaying it.
My goodness.
I'm just relaying it.
Are people sick of the drop pass? Like, what about the power play drop pass? Should we criticize that?
Let's get into it. Let's get into it.
Okay, no, let's definitely not get into the slap pass. I only have so much patience today, Jamie. Let's instead get into the controversial calls. And I want to note, I am putting controversial calls in scare quotes because I don't really see a ton of controversy about this. Dakota Joshua, so let's just go over the penalties in the game. Zadorov cross-checking on Forsberg, hated that penalty. Don't buy, though. I don't buy that Forsberg was selling it, even though he like obviously reacted pretty significantly and then was out there for the first power play opportunity. We know that he's dealing with an injury, and Barry Trotz on Nashville Radio had described it as a cut that is irritating him when he puts his gear on, which is why he hasn't been taking morning skates or practicing for like months. So my guess is, because I've watched a fair bit of Philip Forsberg play in his career, he's not a guy who sells calls. And so my guess is that wherever Zadorov hit him triggered something like that, and that it was just a genuine reaction. But that doesn't mean that it should have been a penalty.
It should have been a penalty,
yeah. And I didn't like it. Now, the only thing that I can say in that penalty's favor is that the McDonough cross-check on Pettersson was similarly a poor call, in my opinion. So at least they applied the same standard, like sort of consistently across the game. The hook on Carrier, that was a no-doubter. The Cole high stick on Forsberg, that was a no-doubter.
Gotta call that, yeah.
What was one of the other Predators penalties? Well, anyway, those are the ones I remember. And then you get to, I think the Canucks only had two power plays, right? So, and then So I think we're up to date. And then the Dakota Joshua boarding call, which Zadorov blasted post game to the refs. You certainly hope that that's not a storyline that we end up tracking or discussing the way we did when Myers called out the refs after the Winnipeg Jets game. Hopefully this is just like isolated and he chose his words tactfully enough. He was certainly aware of trying to choose his words tactfully enough to have not offended anybody. But like, that's a boarding penalty. I don't know what else to say about it. It's a player dumping the puck in, whether he's turning or not. I don't see evidence in the clip that he's turning to draw the penalty. I don't think you turn to draw a penalty and risk getting your head smashed into the dasher.
I think that's another play for me where the standard was set kind of earlier in the series, right? With the boarding call on Joshua. Now, different play because that one's down on the end boards and he's finishing the forecheck. But
on Stasny?
Again, Yeah.
Well, that's the other part of this is
right. Like he'd already been called for a boarding call once. They got it. Now he dropped it down from a major to a minor. But it's kind of like, hey, we're watching this.
And that player played two additional shifts in the series.
Yep.
And like is out week to week, and we all kind of know what that means in terms of what Stasny's dealing with. You're not within the context of a single series, sort of governed by a single supervisor, right? With that supervisor talking to and coaching refs through everything that's happening. This isn't even malignant or like a problem. This is how it kind of should work. It's like, hey, watch for this. Yeah, we assessed a major on this guy. We reviewed it. But it caused a serious injury. We want to be mindful of this. Like that. I'm sorry. In the flow of a playoff series, you have to understand that Dakota Joshua is not going to get the benefit of the doubt on a similar play as the one in game three for which he was assessed a major later reduced. So I don't know. I struggle with that one to see the Canucks point. And then the goalie interference thing. And, you know, the standard here is not like everyone's talking about the Tampa Bay game, right? Because everyone likes to pretend that there's no consistency on goaltender interference, even though it's actually very easy to tell. And the thing about the Tampa thing is you don't actually even need contact in the NHL rulebook to have a goal disallowed for goaltender interference, right? Like if you impede a goalie's ability to move in their crease, in the blue paint, whether there's contact or not, when they're sort of setting up for the shot, that can be disallowed, right? Like we know what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it sort of, rear its head, impact games for the Canucks over the course of the season. Like you remember when JT Miller kept taking goals off of Brock Besser because he was like just too
yes.
close to
yep.
the blue paint. So we've seen that shape conversations around this team this season. This play, however, is what's defined sort of in illustrations in the NHL rulebook as a battle with the goalkeeper for a loose puck inside or outside the crease. And the standard there to overturn the goal is incidental versus
other than incidental.
Other than incidental.
Non-incidental.
I knew you'd know the specifics. Thank you. Other than incidental contact. That is a fine line. Like, I know Tockett's getting ground for not challenging there. And I don't think he helped himself when he said it was a 50-50, because then people are like, well, 50% chance of a disallowed goal versus a 50% chance of a 15% power play scoring. Like, the math doesn't add up there,
right? Especially in that situation where you're leading in a closeout game.
And you know how much I'd love to hold math above anybody. But I don't think, like, you can criticize Tockett for whatever you want, but if you don't think he understands probability, I think you're out to lunch, okay? I don't think Tockett's looking at that as it's a 50-50 in terms of it being disallowed versus standing. I think he is talking about, like, within the narrow bounds of my chances of taking it off the board, it's a 50-50 call for us as a staff.
Yeah.
In terms of where
it's like right on the border of should we challenge this or not.
Because so Josi comes in and people are talking about Josi making contact with the goaltender, but that contact is initiated by Seelovs. I'm sorry, I know fans are not going to want to hear that, but go watch the play. Seelovs makes a great save, and then he extends his arm out and makes contact with Josi. Like that contact is not driven by Josi on that quick cutback off of the pass from Forsberg. So you have that part of it. Then Seelovs is prone and can't gather the puck. And then Teddy Bluger comes and is like doing, you know, responsible, smart Teddy Bluger mm-hmm. stuff to try and prevent a goal, knowing that there's a loose crease or a loose puck in the crease. Meanwhile, Nyquist seeing, because if you actually look at it from the end zone view, you can see that Nyquist has a view of the puck as Seelovs kind of a Magikarps in the blue paint. And Nyquist comes rushing in and he's got his stick down, and right at the point of contact, he stops and sort of tries to pitchfork Seelovs, but I don't think he ever gets there. I think his stick hits Bluger's skate. At almost the exact same time that he arrives, Nikita Zadorov destroys him.
Yes.
Like, Nikita Zadorov wanted to create the Quinn Hughes fake in a way that only Nikita Zadorov can, and just like decks him so hard. The best part of the way Nikita Zadorov decked him too is if you watch the overhead angle, he's so delicate in avoiding Teddy Bluger. It's just fantastic stuff from Big Zed, and we got to get into Big Zed.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
A little more. Now, I buy that Nyquist moves the pile. What I don't know is whether he even makes contact with the goaltender. And what I definitely don't know is whether or not stopping, like making contact with the goaltender because you're stopping while chasing a loose puck, whether or not that's incidental or other than incidental contact.
I actually think I do. To me, that's like the definition of incidental.
I know, me
right?
too.
Like,
you're right. I'm trying to soft play it.
He's allowed, I get it. This is a tough one. I totally understand the emotion of the moment where it's like, okay, if this gets taken off the board, we might go through here. We might go to the second round. I completely understand why there's this focus on it. But reading the rule, looking back at the play, like if that's not incidental contact, I don't really know what is.
No,
honestly,
I know.
You're allowed to go in and try to make a play on the puck. In doing so, incidentally, while trying to make a play on the puck, the goalie gets jarred a little bit and then the puck goes in. That's incidental to me.
It sucks. And also, if he'd like clearly made contact with Seelovs with his stick, I think you'd have a much better case. But the fact that it looks like it's blue, like you can't tell. You can watch it frame by frame. I've watched every angle frame by frame like 8 times trying to figure out what my take should be on this. And I can't reliably tell you where his stick, who and what his stick makes contact with. And while I think, with a decent degree of confidence, that Nyquist moved the pile, I don't know that he moved the pile with other than incidental contact with the goaltender, right? There's so much happening. It's a Renaissance painting play.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much happening all at once. The fact is that the Tampa Bay standard has literally zero application here. And so if your justification for it is like, well, there were some suspicious ones, and like you're fundamentally misunderstanding the rule, right? The likelihood of that goal coming off the board, in my opinion, way lower than 50%. 1 in 10 max, just given how complicated all the various factors are to weigh and the fact that the call on the ice was goal. And here's the other thing. Whatever the data said, if it's a 50-50 call for Rick Tocchet, which, again, does not mean, in my view, a 50-50, 50% chance of overturning. If he thinks he's got a 50% chance of overturning that goal, I'm pretty sure he's
challenging. Oh, 100%.
But a 50-50 for Tocchet's a lower standard, or certainly lower than a 50% probability. You can't strip the sort of coaches. You can't strip a coach from the ability to lean on feel. Like, as much as I love probability and data and to talk about it, he's the guy on the bench. Like, he's the guy with the sense of, like, is this moment too big for my team? Why haven't we played well for 26 minutes on the clock? We got kind of a fortunate goal from a Zadorov rush bar down, you know, like, and now they've scored on the power play. Is it too big an emotional blow to my team? Like, do I trust that if I stop this game for 90 seconds, have a call go against me, and then put my penalty killers back out, that I'm going to, like, help my team win? Or am I better off gathering everybody, you know, hoping that this focuses everybody up, and we're still tied. We still have a chance to win at home in 13 minutes to play. So, you know, I just don't really understand the backseat driving. I certainly think anyone who's presenting it as like black and white is kind of off base. And I think it was a good non-challenge from the coach.
The other thing to take into account here, of course, if you're levying criticism at Tocchet, is Tocchet doesn't have a chance to watch these replays, right? Like, he's getting it from the video coach.
Well, he does. That's why they look
sure,
at the ground.
Sure, but, like, he's also getting the recommendation from the video coach, first and foremost, right? And if I'm watching that play and trying to decide in the moment, I need to see not just like general, like, wow, there was a lot of chaos in there and then the puck ends up in the net. I need to see a kind of smoking gun, right? Where it's like, okay, that is the action that goes beyond incidental, right? Whether it's a push with the stick, a push, you know, with your skates, whatever it is. And I just don't see that. I don't see that one act you can point to from Nyquist where the refs are going to take it. Because again, the other thing to keep in mind here is the standard to overturn a call, right? Which is you need conclusive evidence. So even if you think that, okay, that is more of an incidental contact, what happened on that play, are they going to see that conclusively? Are they going to say, yes, we were conclusively wrong with that call? And that's where I really run into problems with the idea of challenging it. I just don't think there was enough there. I think there was very, very little chance of that being overturned. Okay, lots more to get into from the game. Just quickly lineup notes, which we can do.
Can we just say Nikita Zadorov, though? I know we're done.
Let's talk about him in the next segment.
But the people who listen to the white.
All right.
I just want to note. Guy's playing top pair minutes in this series. Mm-hmm. They are using him heavily. He's getting luxuriously praised by Rick Tocchet. He's scored 2 of the last 8 goals for this team. That individual effort last night was killer. And, like, what's better in hockey than a giant man who hits hard and does fun stuff on the ice at all moments? Just a joy. Just a joy. All right, sorry.
Travel day today. No practice for the team. Tockett's going to speak to the media at 5 Pacific time. One lineup roster note, though. Vasily Podkolzin, as was suggested yesterday, officially assigned by the club to Abbotsford. Abbotsford plays tonight in California against the Ontario Reign. Not sure Podkolzin will be able to be in the lineup for that one. They play again on Sunday, also down in California. Anything to add to the betting odds before we close up the whiteboard?
Just that the Nashville Predators implied probability, so their odds are minus 320 now to win the series, Canucks plus 260. Minus 320 is about a 76.2% probability of advancing. However, Dom's model has them at closer to 62%. So some value on the Preds based on what Dom's model thinks of these two teams.
That is the whiteboard for today. Remember, we had the crossover with Donnie and Dolly coming up at noon. Open segment next, so get your text in, 650-650. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.